Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and mark your calendars for Tuesdays at noon, including about 10 minutes from now, when I'll be hosting live online chats on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. We'll be aiming for great chat topics and great chat guests. Today we have Baratunde Thurston, who combines political seriousness with political humor as online editor for The Onion and a founder of the black-oriented site Jack and Jill Politics. We'll talk mostly about President Obama's policies and black America and about the 2012 presidential field, but anything goes, and there will surely be some laughs along the way as well. If you haven't been in on one of these before, it's a text-based chat. All you have to do is be near a computer, and you can type in any comment or question you want to take part in that conversation. So join me and Baratunde Thurston from The Onion and Jack and Jill Politics for our Tuesday politics chat coming up at noon today in about 10 minutes at itsafreecountry.org. And for those 10 minutes, as if you could possibly not know, there's a wedding on Friday. Britain's Prince William, grandson of the Queen, son of Prince Charles, is to marry Commoner Kate Middleton at Westminster Abbey. And the wedding is bringing up the question of who will succeed Queen Elizabeth, now in her 80s. Polls have consistently shown that most Brits would prefer Prince Charles abdicate and let Prince William jump to king. So is the British monarch still powerful enough that it matters? Why is Prince Charles less popular than his son anyway? To look at these questions, we are joined by John Burns, the London bureau chief for the New York Times. Hi, John. Welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure.
And normally, when you come on, we're talking about things like war and peace. So this is a bit of change of pace. Is the royal wedding more fun to cover?
It's a different gear for me.
It looks like people here seem to fall into two camps on this. Those who can't get enough of this story, it sounds like it's straight out of a fairy tale and people are going to host wedding parties at 4 o'clock in the morning, New York time. And those deeply embarrassed by the hoopla over the anachronistic notion of royalty. Is that split evident in London, too?
Well, a week or so ago, there was an increasingly common supposition that there was more interest in this in the United States than in the United Kingdom, but I think that was affixed to the fact that the U.S. networks have sent these armies, I mean real armies of people here. In the case of NBC, I think somewhere upwards of 200, closer to 300 people. But as the weddings got closer, there's some signs of some excitement here. The Guardian ran a poll yesterday which showed not an enormous amount of excitement, but to the question, are you genuinely interested and excited by the royal wedding? The response was 46% yes, 37% no. So I would say the excitement at the moment runs somewhat behind the premiership football and who's going to win that. But nonetheless, I think it's gathering, and I think you'll see lots of people in the streets on Friday.
What does the English monarch actually do in this supposedly enlightened age?
Well, I think what she does is very important. Of course, first of all, she's the visible, she being Queen Elizabeth at the moment, symbol and embodiment of the state and of the nation. This is a kingdom of four nations, as you know, the English, the Irish, the Welsh, and the Scots. I think she's been very effective, this monarch, as have her predecessors, in remaining a unifying force for that. She's also not to be entirely discounted in the constitutional sense. She does actually appoint the government. Of course, she does that on the advice and guidance of whoever commands a majority in the House of Commons. She meets with the Prime Minister once a week and is said by all of those who have, and I think it's not just a matter of deference, all the Prime Ministers in her lifetime, and there have been, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 of them, going back to Winston Churchill, have spoken warmly and enthusiastically of the advice that she gives. Of course, we don't know what that advice is. It's part of the constitutional pact that we're never told. But I think that the monarchy performs a hugely important stabilizing role in this country, perhaps less so as a result of the indiscretions, divorces, and extravagances of the past 30 years, but there are still, the same Guardian poll shows 89% who believe that Britain will still have a monarchy in 10 years' time.
To what extent does this idea that Prince Charles should abdicate stem from his perceived mistreatment of his former wife and Prince William's mother, the late Princess Diana, and the fact that he's now married to Camilla, whom Diana blamed for breaking up their marriage? Camilla was the focus of your recent article.
Of course, that changed the landscape for the monarchy here in the most fundamental way. You may recall that in those days when Diana's body lay awaiting burial in London, and the Queen and other members of the royal family remained ensconced in Balmoral, their mansion, their estate in Scotland, there was a crisis such as this country had not seen since the abdication in 1936, and it took Tony Blair, by his own account, but I think it's true, to shake the royal family out of their torpor at that time and get the Queen to fly down to London, because I think there was a general perception that the monarchy was really at risk. In fact, again, the polls at the time showed about only about half of the country thought that we should abandon the monarchy. Those figures changed quite rapidly in the year that followed, but I think that's really the principal marker in the life of Prince Charles as far as many of the public are concerned.
Those who saw the movie The King's Speech saw a tale of a traumatic event for the Queen's family. The last time there was an abdication after the saga of King Edward and Wallace Simpson. Is that a relatively true portrayal? And is that leading people to resist the idea of abdication within the family?
I think it is. I think that film, I mean, his argument as to whether or not the Australian was really the one who overcame the King's stammering problem. But I think the film is, in other respects, very authentic. I remember my own father, who was a fighter pilot in the Royal Air Force at the time, speaking of the fury amongst his fellow officers listening to the abdication speech in 1936. I mean, there was a real distemper in this country at the time. After all, people got used to the monarch being the rock of the nation's existence, and here was a monarch who was walking away from it only, what, less than a year, considerably less than a year after his own father had died, saying he wanted to marry a twice-divorced American woman. Of course, attitudes have changed now, but I think that the same sequence of events played out today would have a pretty negative response, not the American part of it. But in any case, the abdication certainly took the throne as nothing in the last century other than the divorce of Charles and Diana and all the scandal that attended it.
We've got a minute left. Very briefly, two things. Would Camilla be queen if Charles refuses to abdicate once Queen Elizabeth dies? You wrote that when they were married, it was announced that her title would be Princess Consort.
Yeah, now constitutional scholars, the most respected ones, say that whatever the palace says makes no difference, that in the unwritten constitutional tradition of this country, in our common law, the wife of the king is the queen. It's only a question of what you call her.
So they may not get to decide that.
Sorry, again?
It may not be up to them to decide whether she's called queen or not.
No, it'll be up to the government to decide it, but they're clearly trying to move, both of them, public opinion on that ahead of the eventual death of Queen Elizabeth.
And so finally, whose decision would abdication be? Can the queen dictate it now?
Now, I'm not sure that has ever occurred, and I think we'd have to see, but in effect, it's highly unlikely that the government, short of gross criminality, would demand that. I think in the end, it's going to be decided within the royal family.
The political establishment has no formal say.
No, it doesn't. And in any case, I think it's rather a moot point because Charles has made it absolutely clear. He's lived his life in expectation of becoming king. He wants to do it, and nothing is going to stop him doing it.
John Burns for The New York Times in London. Thank you very much for coming on and talking royal wedding politics with us.
Thank you.
And again, listeners, don't forget, coming up in just 1 minute now, I'm going to move over from the radio side to the online side. We invite you to join me and Baratunde Thurston from The Onion and Jack and Jill Politics for one of our Tuesday Politics chats. It's at our politics website, coming right up in a minute. It'sAFreeCountry.org. It'sAFreeCountry.org. See you over there and talk to you tomorrow on the radio, when our guests will include Evan Bayh and T. Boone Pickens tomorrow. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.